There we go. Great.
Okay.
So one of the things I'd love to do is ask you first to think about someone you know who leads in where you are in the Gore world, and they lead in a way you believe a Gore leader should lead. And tell me about that person, almost like a story in terms of what do they do differently or similar to others? What kind of results do they get? Why do you say that they lead the way you think a Gore leader should lead? And names are okay.
Okay. The person who I think leads like we should lead in Gore that I want to tell a story about is Joe Pierce. So he may be a person to talk to based on maybe what I have to say. But I believe Joe does an amazing job at leading with head and heart in the sense of paying attention to the people side and reactions and being open but not judging. You know, what people have to say is a good or bad idea in that moment, but, you know, staying curious and asking more about what they were thinking when they made a comment or an idea or a suggestion. And then being willing to explore and get data and disprove or prove one way or another whether things are right or wrong. So he's patient enough to give things an opportunity to flourish or prove themselves wrong, but not to a wasteful extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that reminds me a lot of what I read about in the culture, but don't always feel every day.
So contrast it with what you sometimes see every day so that can really make the difference.
There's a lot of other leaders who are very quick to insert their opinions and pass the judgment on an idea or talk about how it's been done before. There are a lot of people who are very, very quick to decide.
What's the impact on people when he acts that way?
When Joe acts that way, when he
yes.
I've seen some people really kind of wake up, or some people kind of stop and pause and really try to put their thoughts together in an organized way to prepare to share, you know, a case or a view or a perspective, you know, because perhaps they were surprised that someone was really wanting to know what they thought.
Mm.
So it's actually really nice.
So by him being that way, he really calls forth the associate in a different way.
Yes.
And so what kind of associate do we get when we treat people like that?
We get more we get people who think more and think further than what they would initially, because now they feel like they have a responsibility to do so, to share their thought and to drive it through. It's not necessarily based on qualification or past experience or what I know that person has worked on or hasn't worked on. It's based on what the thought was there in the moment and you know, whatever culmination of experience led them to that perspective. So I think you get people who feel more credible in our organization rather than less credible because of seniority or because of time in a certain technology field or something like that.
That's really interesting, because we recently did an internal study of all the associates under 28 years old in the enterprise.
Mm.
I don't know if you heard about that.
I did not.
But there is a real split between those who really feel empowered and respected and pulled forth, and those who really feel left out and talked to. And
yeah.
It's good to get precisely at a behavior that can create those two different impacts.
Yes. Yeah, I believe that.
I
believe that data is true.
There you go. Okay. Which reminds me that I have to pull that data for this group, so I would have to make a note on that.
Okay.
Very good. Who is another person who you would think leads the way we want them to lead, who might do it in a completely different way, or just another aspect of this?
Yeah. Another one, this goes back a little ways, but when I first went to Shenzhen, I was working with Jerry Mulligan as the team leader. And I think, you know, Jerry always realized that I was probably half qualified for that position when I came on board, but was really willing to take a chance, and I always felt like he believed I was way more capable than I believed in myself. So that just the way he expected me to engage kind of sort of allowed me to perform at that level. So again, it's a little bit repetitive, but Jerry's style and approach wasn't necessarily as I don't want to use the word soft, but it was more like it's just a plain expectation that I would be engaging at a more mature and a more capable level than what I felt like I was ready for, and it was something that I was able to be successful at, which he was clear to tell me later on, but it took a little adjustment on my side to really step up and perform. So it was a different kind of approach, maybe, but one that I felt like, I was grateful for, because I really felt like it changed the way I performed.
How did he handle it when you really were over your head and when things didn't go well?
I think this may be what was most successful is he would pull me aside, and we would have these one-on-one conversations of what's going on, what's wrong, what's scary, what do you need? But it wasn't anything that ever happened so that I was embarrassed in front of other people or calling out my in over my headness or whatever it was. It was more along the lines of, I felt like sometimes he would look at me and I could see in his brain he was making a note to talk to me after the meeting. I was like, okay, I'm going to just hang back after the meeting because so then we would sit down and go, okay, what's wrong? All right, let's figure this out. And, or send someone else to do it. So from time to time, he would be really busy, and it would be like, okay, can you just check in with Karen? I think there's a roadblock there or something. So I felt like, which was okay because it was a different perspective, a different person that I trusted, but still, I felt like there was a resource coming to help me.
That's interesting. I don't know that we always think about the supports to put in place when we're asking someone to stretch.
Yes, I think that's true.
And so there was some kind of safety net for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other thing that really helped with the kind of approach that Jerry had is he just gave me a ton of credit from time to time. Like he would expect me to do things, and then when it worked out, he would just be really willing to say, and this is Karen's idea, and she took care of this, and it was a really good piece of work. And then he would just move on. It wasn't like overly done, but, I just felt startled sometimes by, those kinds of remarks, and it just made a wonderful impression on me. I really appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Let's look even, so both of them, I think, were in roles where they're leaders of team leaders. Is that possible? They have pretty broad influence.
Okay. Yes.
Can you look even earlier career, younger?
Yep.
Yeah. Who's starting to stand out to you in more of a team leader role who has some of the right stuff?
So emerging associates right now, like a Mark Steimer Jr. is an example. He's a person on my team who has just got the most amazing thought process, just really careful thinker, and really, comes up with really, really great plans and really good ideas and solid and doesn't hesitate to get them done, and he effortlessly seems to pull people together. The thing we talk about and work on is, he asks for permission a lot. I think he does maybe a little bit too much checking in, but that's okay. But I think, as a team leader, I have to work really hard to create space for him to kind of get out there and really create opportunities for him to respond to things he's passionate about in a way that allows him to experience, okay, I led that piece, or I planned that piece, or, So I recently actually backfilled for him in his current role so that he can go on to do some really big projects that we have waiting on us. And he, I can tell he's feeling stretched, but I can tell he's really excited right now. And so just trying to keep him in a comfortable place has been...
A comfortable, uncomfortable place.
Not too far, right? I mean, just on the edge without, You know, I want him to feel pressure without feeling like he can't handle it.
Yes. Interesting. Good. All right. So what are some of the actual practices that you've seen over time where you go, oh, I got to take that. I got to start doing that. And again, you might be thinking of people first, but and then what they do. You've given me some of these, but what are some of the, like, almost disciplines that some of the better leaders you've worked with have?
I think whether or not you call it a discipline or not, I think informing people that you're in their minds as an emerging leader and you would like to see more of certain behaviors, putting that directly onto the table to say, when you're doing projects, I would like to see more of this, and when you're doing things, I expect to see more of that, and really applying the expectation for them to grow into that role, you know, without promising anything, right? There's no guarantees, but I think that's one thing that maybe I learned from Jerry. It's like, it's almost like if you have an expectation of people, they will be much better capable to perform.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when developing a leader, it's very important, or developing someone from a teammate to a team leader, to tell them that's, you know, the thing that you're expecting of them, and that you want to grow that skill set, and that it is my intention to create space for you, and I expect you to step into it and perform. And so I think that's one thing that might not be very clear sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, listening carefully to make sure that's what they want and sweet spot and all that. But once the development plan is there and executed, you know, really testing the waters and being very clear about that process.
Mm-hmm. So what's your own practice around development plans?
I'm very serious about development plans. Everyone on my team has them. I make sure they have them. I make sure they take them seriously. I make sure that we talk about them outside of development season.
Uh-huh.
You know, I actually feel like I hold them more accountable to making sure that they're working through those items and they feel like they have the ownership over them.
Mm-hmm.
I use that language with them when we're reviewing development plans and when we're talking about the plan. I'm not afraid to get my development plan out and point to it and show it to people. And, you know, if they're stuck, I will get my plan out or an old plan and go, this is how I did it. You know, this is just an idea. You know, you might want to think about that. Or, you know, so I kind of am not afraid to use my own plans and know that I do this too, and I talk to my leader and my sponsor about my own plans and just make sure that they're aware. That's something I feel is quite serious. And I encourage them to talk to other people, not just their leader and their sponsor, but maybe, you know, one or two others that might be helpful.
So, you know, development plans are so different around the enterprise. What are the kinds of elements that you encourage, like an early team leader, to have on their plan?
The opportunity to really own and change something. You know, not just attend a class, not just get better at design of experiments, not just, you know, develop the engineering skills, but to really, really, you know, if there's an issue, to partner with the production leader on solving an issue and coming up with a plan and you know, really getting other people on board, selling your idea and doing it, right? So, more, you know, you talked about the experiential piece, but really I find that to be the most powerful thing that people can do to build that credibility and feel confident in themselves. So I do want to make sure that there's a big, meaty kind of problem identified that they want to go out and take care of as part of what they're planning. So, you know, how can we build a plan or model costing or come up with a TBC savings opportunity and drive that through and
mm-hmm. And now I would assume that part of why it's on a development plan isn't just to get the work done, but to learn from it. So that would suggest sometimes there are other people they need to learn from.
Yes.
Now, how much do you do as a leader or even a sponsor in some cases to construct this, or do you coach it, or how do they get the extra help?
So almost everyone that I talk to, I try to send to another more knowledgeable person on the subject matter, you know. So if not a mentor, then at least a consultant, someone that they can try to go to learn more. you know, so maybe it's a scientist, or maybe it's a manufacturing leader, or maybe, you know, another more experienced engineer, but just continuing to try to get other people signed up to their development plan besides myself, because I'm going to think about it anyway, is how I talk to them about it.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want me thinking about your plan. You want other people who are knowledgeable in your area thinking about you and your plan. So, you know, commit to go spend some time to talk about your ideas with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so this is, are there other practices? So that was really nice, dive into the development practices. And what about other kinds of leader practices? So let's think about maybe operations leaders. Are there specific practices that would work for any GOR associate, but they might be better at it than some?
I'm sorry, specific leadership practices for operations.
Yeah, or operations, or, you know, it could be from whatever point of view you have in the world.
Okay.
Have you seen anybody, like, even functionally, who's a really profoundly better team leader? And what are some of the things they do that you think we might all learn from?
So another one that I think is you know, the leader who, and I've seen this from a couple of different people, the leader who constantly looks to create space for others to step in. So if we're having a room on Worth, let's invite a couple of people who are interested in doing room on Worth to watch that experience, right, to sit down and witness a couple. I mean, it's not just a one or two off. It's like constant. You know, it's, okay, where can we, if you're going through a difficult situation, get someone else involved to go along with you or to learn from that and to help. You know, so they're just really always looking for space to allow one or two other people in to a situation. Actually, I think Kevin Kirk does a really great job at that. Just always, you know, looking to, you know, I mean, if he's advising someone else, I'm always thinking he's advising them to grab, you know, maybe a newer person to help out with some of it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So he's always creating capability. Also including, that's very respectful to ask someone, I think.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job at that. And I think it's really benefited others to feel like they are thought of, that they are included, and that they, you know, their development plans are being taken seriously. So that, I think that's you know, it's one thing to include someone in your own things, but it's another thing to advise, you know, your teammates to continually pull in other teammates and other emerging leaders to experience, you know, the decision-making, the tough situations.
Wow, yes. How have you seen people learn decision-making at GOR? I mean, that might be one piece, but what else have you seen?
So I have one emerging teammate right now who And it's so funny because he reminded me a lot of when we were in Shenzhen. This was a continuous conversation that I had with associates who would come to me for advice because they had to make a decision or something had to be done and they didn't know what to do. Just starting the conversation off with, well, what do you think you should do? And what are your ideas before I say anything at all? And I find that there's some people in our enterprise that just works beautifully with. Like, they know what to do. They just haven't thought it through, and they haven't, you know, or they have thought it through and didn't realize they were able to make the decision on themselves by themselves, or, you know, but just being willing to talk their own thought process through with them is a wonderful decision making. You know, what are the gaps? What's another view on that decision? Who's going to oppose that decision, and how can you think about that? How can you get ahead of that, or how can you, you know, manage that opposition? Or is it a great point? You need to incorporate it. You know, so really understanding that decision making doesn't always happen in a meeting, but in fact happens with a series of conversations and talking about risk and benefit, and really understanding the big picture. You know, are you going upstream with something that's really not worth it, or are you just struggling with a team that's resisting change? You know, let's talk about what's the decision that we're trying to make and how it fits in.
That's great. Very helpful on that. So let me see. Oh, yes, here's another one that we hear is a real challenge for the early leader, And that is holding people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
They've made a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
If something's not happening,
mm-hmm.
What do you personally do?
Personally?
Yeah.
I reach out and I check in and just ask how things are going and if there's help needed or, you know, did things get busy or do we need more resources? You know, is there something, there's something holding us up from making progress and try to make sure that I was clear in the first place on when I needed an answer. You know,
right.
Sometimes that's not always clear. You know, make sure that it was understood and then just try to understand what's happening in that person's world in the moment, you know. And then one thing I've learned that happens in court tech all the time is we don't share enough information with another part of court tech that they understand the value or the importance or, you know, it just sounds like another squeaky wheel in the organization. But really, you know, if you sit down and explain clearly what's going on and the size of the opportunity or the impact of what's happening and really, you know, try to convey the importance, that makes a big difference because I've made that mistake before just assuming that people understood and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really just being open to the fact that people may or may not have other priorities. They may or may not have all the information to make a good prioritization decision.
Mm-hmm.
Or just understand if there's trouble, right? If there's stuff going on that's causing an issue and you know, we're behind or... I mean, very rarely it's like, all right, that person really doesn't want to do my work.
Right.
You know, and if that is the case, well, why?
Right.
Right, you know, understanding what's going on there. And sometimes I just bring that up. I put it on the table. I'm like, are you really not interested in this?
Mm.
Just to see what the response is.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens if that's admitted?
Why? You know, what else is going on that's more exciting than this? And if you were sitting in my chair, what would you do at this point?
Oh, good. Very nice.
Yeah.
Hmm, got it. So this is one, this next set of questions is one that I think is challenging for Gore Associates because we try not to go there, but we don't need names on this one. But have you thought of some leaders who are not as effective and are doing some things that you think are really making it harder either for the results, for themselves, or most of all their people?
Yeah. I mean, in operations from time to time, I'll see there's not clear feedback given to an emerging or new person. You know, they kind of dance around maybe what's happening with a person's style, approach, or communication technique or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, especially in operations, if they're like a manufacturing leader and dealing with operators, I mean, the operators can be really direct with each other and indirect with their leader. And if that feedback loop never gets closed very well, one way or another, if there's not a direct communication there, then a lot of times I can see people go for years not really understanding how they're perceived or you know, what's being the indirect feedback that's not making its way through.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that I've seen leaders allow that to happen with their emerging leaders, you know, maybe ignoring what everyone else is saying about them or not addressing it or not bringing it up. I tell you, the one lesson that we don't tend to teach people is if you've got past baggage, the only way you're ever going to get rid of that past baggage is put it on the table and go, I got baggage, but I'm working on it, and maybe you can help me.
Well,
we don't tell people that. They just try to pretend like there's no baggage there.
Wow.
So that happens a lot, I think.
Well, and that's the kind of coaching we need to do for people. They don't need to know how to help themselves at that time.
Yeah. I mean, I just think people feel like they have to hide this stuff. And meanwhile, everybody knows. It's not like it's hidden. It's just not talked about. And I think the mere act of putting it on the table gives you power over it. So I just think that's like a secret we really don't discuss.
Who would they put it on the table with?
Anybody. I mean, you certainly wouldn't want to talk to someone you don't trust about that sort of thing. But you really only have to talk to 3 or 4 people for the organization to begin to understand that you're making the change.
Mm-hmm.
That you're taking, you know, say I never listen to other people. I just talk all the time. And that's the thing, right? And everyone knows. It's like, oh, Lord, you won't get a word in otherwise against that guy. You know, being open in conversations, just saying, I know I talk a lot. I'm trying to do better. you know, maybe lift your finger off the table or give me a signal if I seem to be talking, but I'm going to go ahead and try to stop myself sometimes, so it might be weird, but that's what I'm doing.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I heard someone I'm coaching do that recently. You know,
good.
Yes, and he had figured out how to say that. And it does start. It people don't believe it for a while, so repetition is good.
Yes, it's very good. It takes at least 6 months, by the way. I mean, I just people don't believe that, but you really genuinely have to convince people that you do. You haven't internalized it, really.
Mm. Got it. Very nice. I think I'll add that to the coaching class.
Yay, that would be good. That would be great for us. I would love everybody to know that.
Yes, because everybody should be working on something.
We all are.
And then we could be supporting each other in it instead. Very nice. Yeah. So if you were just to get to, like, important skills, like if you could pick three skills, wave a magic wand, and every GOR leader would be better at it. You know, think about what it would be, or what they would be. And then let's go there first. We'll take this in steps. So what on your instinct do you think are the three most critical skills?
Three most critical skills of leading. I mean, asking those powerful questions. You know, understanding what your team is saying and understanding what other leaders are saying really clearly by asking and clarifying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and pausing to genuinely listen to the answer. So that's number two.
Oh,
one, ask. Two, pause and really try to understand the answer, right? So don't judge it. Don't write it off, you know.
Yep.
The answers tell you so much about the person and so much about what's happening. You know, even if you don't buy it, try to find the nugget of knowledge in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's so
mm-hmm.
much data around us that we just blow off. So those would be two things that I think we would, you know, we would be better leaders given all the right information in the room and in the enterprise and where we care to listen and ask.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a third? Talk through our thought process with one other person.
Hmm. Say more.
So if I've got a really strong opinion on something, and I'm, you know, ready to lead with my point and to really start to influence others and really get out there, if I have one or two conversations with one or two of my teammates or someone else about that topic, about my point, before leading out with it, it gets better. It gets just better and better every time. And I learn something, and I'm able to improve it, and it gets more credible. So I think it makes me a better leader, and I wish others would really pause to do that, because you can see people when they're leading and working it out as they're talking.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell. And so, and it gives someone else a chance to shape the plan, right, which is always a good thing.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, it also builds buy-in to a point. I mean, people start to get with supporting the idea when they've been asked to help.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think if I was an emerging leader, those would be things that I would be able to use right away.
Nice.
And I would, you know, it's just lovely hearing me say this because it's a reminder for myself.
Sure, exactly. Right. I do hear you. I'm sure that's part of our process too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got the five dimensions of leadership, and you know what they are. But I thought, let's put the frame of the early leader on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so think of yourself back then or Mark Jr. or somebody else who's in that early frame.
Mm-hmm.
So what does getting it done mean to someone like that?
Getting it done to an early leader means getting a group of people to execute on something pretty important and meaningful. I find that to me and to the others that I see right now, they want that meaningful, impactful work. They're not just trying to prove themselves. They're trying to prove themselves and get others involved and do it with something that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I feel like that is a perfect kind of opportunity for that point in a career is to make sure that there's a good level of impact and a good level of importance to whatever it is they're trying to take care of.
What are some of the actual skills around getting it done, especially since it's important?
Good basic functional capability, a strong understanding of the functional tools, a good understanding of project practices and the thought process behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're thinking things through well. They're knowing the expectations. They're knowing who their lattice is. So they're able to work through the system. They're not afraid of hard work. They're willing to be held accountable and hold others accountable. In to some degree, in their kind of closed circle.
So, what do you mean?
It's hard when you have to go out and work with people you don't know.
And
influence across people you don't know. But, for that group, they're the ones that are really good at doing it in their own teams and with their own teammates and people that they do know.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of building on that experience.
Now, what about the fact that this is often the first time that they're coordinating work of others as well? So what are the skills around being sure all the pieces come together to meet the result or metrics? Who can you think of right now who has that important thing to do, and they just seem to bring people together in such an effective way that all the effort, produces value?
I've seen, people who are really able to convey the passion of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're really able to talk about the importance, and so others really start to pick up on that, and they understand it, and they want to be part of it too. They want to be involved because this is a really great thing, and they believe in what's happening, and they believe why it's important, and it's interesting and challenging, and I think the ability to convey and sell that and really talk it through is what helps the people that I see who are influential continue to be influential. And they're recognized. I think that recognition is important. There's emerging leaders who tend to want it to be all about them, like the lone wolf type people, and then there's the ones that are like, no, I just want to get this great thing done, and I'm perfectly happy to give you all credit and make sure your names are attached to this whole thing. Because it's not about the names, it's about getting this thing done.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. those are things where I've seen mm-hmm. people really be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting in our enterprise that if credit is not given when help is given, especially in this younger group, that's noted. So a person can get kind of marked as kind of a credit taker kind of person.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Okay.
I've noticed that more so maybe with the newer emerging leaders than maybe what it used to be.
Mm. That's a hard one to undo a reputation on.
It is.
So what about shaping the vision? I think there's a lot of curiosity about what does that look like for an emerging leader?
Shaping the vision. It
doesn't matter anything like off the definitions. It's what do you think?
I think, personally, I always struggled with this because it was so nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, I think the process of shaping the vision has become a lot more accessible to people who, don't spend significant time in industry or significant time with strategic thinkers because Gore is implementing processes around strategy statements and Gore is going through this process right now, so it's more than ever. There's opportunity to get different perspectives because it's written down, the conversations and the questions and the kinds of things that we should think about. And so, there's really not a whole lot of excuse for getting some kind of inputs and sharing the strategic thinking process with others because we have that now. We can do that now. We have strategic statements and we're asking and making choices and keeping those choices in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, at that level, those emerging associates, I would encourage them to be part of that process, to go talk to someone about what are the strategic statements that would shape the work that I'm doing and how can I be in alignment with that, and how can I give a little feedback on what we're saying?
Interesting. Yeah. So is it more of an alignment task then? It's not so much creating the vision.
Pardon me. I'm really not sure. I mean, I think the wording and for maybe newer associates is around understanding and being in alignment with, but I think someone in a 5 to 7 year range definitely has the experience to give feedback and to try to, you know, share their opinions, because they will have opinions.
Yes, yes, good. So it really is find a way to take a more active and proactive shaping role in those critical strategies.
Yeah, and it might be split right now with associates in that time frame who have an opinion and want to share it and realize they, you know, realize that they want to be involved in that process, and those who just would like to but just don't think about it or don't realize that's an opportunity. So probably a bit of both.
What about the leading others? So we're going through the five dimensions, and the next one, of course, is leading others. And so what's the essence of the role of this early leader in leading others?
So this is their first opportunity to really start to use maybe the pipeline tools, for example, and really start examining their own behaviors. Because it's so, you know, in talking with a couple of people that I'm developing right now as leaders, you know, they're really quick to judge others, and they're really quick to put people in their boxes and go, you know, well, I think they want this, so I'm going to make that decision for them. No, don't do that. Have a conversation. Don't make the decision. Or if they're judging someone else, to really pause and go, why do you think they're doing that? You know, why is that happening? So it slows those emerging leaders down when they're judging too quickly what's happening without understanding why, and when they're making assumptions on the behalf of others. I think a mistake an early person to lead others makes is that, you know, I just need to make decisions faster, and I need to be ahead of the game. And I can do that because I know that person kind of likes the work that they're doing, so that I can assume that they'll always like the work that they're doing, and that's fine. That's the box I'll put them in. So I've just seen that thinking come up a lot, and I'm just trying really hard to get them to slow down and not try to be so fast about it.
Got it. Very good. Well, you know, that kind of leads into the remaining two, and the first one is culture. I'm going to ask you kind of an out-of-the-box question on that one, and that is, what do you think is really unique about GORE that makes it challenging to lead in our culture?
It's this whole idea of, you know, we will get feedback that we're not leading in the culture if we're not using the words of the culture to explain our decision-making process, but people really hesitate to do that because it feels canned to them. It feels like they don't really mean it. It feels unnatural, you know, and so getting to a place where you've spent enough time talking about the culture that it naturally comes into you, your conversations, and it naturally, you know, it's not easy sometimes to include the culture in your conversation if you're not used to doing it. You can be a great associate believing in it and practicing it and trying to let it guide your actions, but when it comes time as an emerging leader to talk about leading in the culture, explaining decisions in the culture, but that's something that has to be practiced, and I don't think people understand that, and they're a little bit uncomfortable with it.
Can you think of who does this really, really well so we have some role models?
I know Joe does it really well. I mean, I hear the culture come up in his conversations, and I didn't see it coming, and it makes sense where he talks about it, and it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I mean, that's fine. I think I'm less smooth with it, but I always keep the paper handy so that I can get it out in the middle of a conversation and go, okay, how would we use the culture to help us make this decision?
You mean like the egg?
I keep the paper in my notebook so that I can get it out and go, all right, well, let's talk this through in the perspective of the culture. Let's weigh some things from one side to the other side and see what we think.
So you're kind of doing it for yourself, but you're modeling for the person you're with how to do it.
Yes, because that makes it less artificial, because I'm conscious of that and I'm trying to learn it myself and I'm trying to help them understand that this is how we do it.
Mm-hmm. See, that's a theme with you. I'm really pulling out here. That is the we don't always have to be comfortable or capable of what we're doing, but if we're letting others know where we are with it, it seems to provide an awful lot of freedom and freedom to not have it be perfect and to co-create.
Yeah. Yes, you've got a good theme for me.
that's
true. I'm not sure I would have explained that to you today, but you're right.
Oh, that's fun. And then our last one, of course, is the leading self, and that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So what does leading self look like in a really early team leader?
I think leading self comes very naturally to a lot of the emerging leaders. They have a strong sense of responsibility. They have a strong sense of wanting to contribute and really, you know, wanting their own work to be of really good quality and high integrity. I think the hardest challenge for someone like that is to talk to others about what you're doing and why you're doing it, mm-hmm. and to let others in. And so if they're already naturally doing that, then that's wonderful. But just, you know, I personally am very passionate around leading by example and trying to make sure that, you know, whenever possible, I'm trying to lead by example.
Mm.
And then I wouldn't ask someone to do something I wouldn't ask myself to do, you know. And to use myself in this example, because, you know, I feel like that opens a person up to feedback. But I think with leading self, those things a little uncomfortable at first, but are the things that allow the greatest growth and flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, and with the kind of support that you've been describing especially.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, I want to be super conscious of your time.
Oh, yes, that's right. We're a little bit over.
It is time. But thank you for this. It's been you've really put some richness on some of these really important points, and I know that we'll find a way to get back to you and others who are helping us with this. I think that you're interested, right?
I am. And, Deborah, I'm always happy to share if it's helpful. So, I mean,
well,
whatever you need.
Thank you so much, Karen. I really appreciate you always.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.